Hello, friends and folks, and welcome back to another podcast from Scanline Media here on our Scanline Talks feed. I'm Six Detmar of Scanline Media. I'm joined by co-founder, co-host, Hi, Jen.
Hey, it's me, Jenna Frunkel. I'm also in a lot of Scanline stuff.
Yeah, a pretty good percentage, I would say. You know, we've been doing this for more than 8 years.
Yeah, it's been a while. Like, for whatever reason, my brain always associates starting this site around the time when I, like, switched colleges. That's how long it's been.
Wow. I have no context for when I started this. I just occasionally have to check for example, a job application for a job I'll never get. And I'm like, oh, March 2013. Wow, fuck.
Yeah, it's been a while.
And in that time, you know, our taste has evolved, our lives have evolved, and I think it's safe to say, while I liked some things, I wasn't nearly as passionate as I was, as I am now, about Gundam.
Yeah, I'm pretty much in the same boat. Like, I didn't really grow up with it as a kid or teenager. I just associated it with a series that I... Well, I just associated it with a world that I was never going to enter, but then once we started doing anime podcasts, it was kind of inevitable that we would get to it. And, yeah, ever since then, pretty big fan of Gundam.
Yeah. And we have recently been given a new Gundam game based on a game that I played a lot of, Gundam Battle Operation 2, but that's a online multiplayer PvP thing. And we have been given the opportunity to play the new, based on that, Code Fairy.
Yep. Full name is Mobile Suit Gundam Battle Operation Code Fairy, which, like many other Gundam video game names, is kind of a mouthful, but it essentially takes that online video game and adds something close to, I don't know the best way to term it, but I feel like there's a specific style of campaigns you'll get in flight simulators or just combat dogfighting kind of games, where you go into a room, you see a 3D representation of the battlefield, you mess with your vehicle, or mobile suit in this case, you hit sortie, and then you go on a mission.
But also, I mean, you have these between mission like segments, you have like characters and some character development, which I'm not saying is completely absent, but like even, you know, like Ace Combat, I feel like is partially what you were pointing at there. Ace Combat doesn't really have any between mission character development.
Ace Combat 7 does, I would say. Like, it gets into a whole arc with why your character got here, the kind of people they're surrounded by, all that sort of stuff.
Ace Combat 7 between missions is exclusively one lady talking, though. And barely ever talking about you. There's some world development, but I don't think there's character development.
That's fair. It's not as heavy as it is in this game, where they are straight up structuring it like a Gundam OVA. Like, every time you go into a new chapter, it plays the full intro. You get various scenes before you get into it, and by the end, you're getting, like, a credits bumper before the next thing.
And the vibes are very much like college dorm by way of anime.
Yeah, one of the characters even says, think of this less like a military base, it's more like a woman's dormitory.
Yeah. And it's interesting because obviously what we have so far, we have chapters 1 to 5. I guess we'll probably end up doing one for 6 to 10 and then, you know, 11 to 15 plus chapter EX, which I know exists because of trophies, but I don't know what that means. But at this point, I mean, it's been a pretty, well, you know what? Okay. Jen, as I so often call upon you to do, can you give us the elevator pitch for the plot of this game so far?
Sure thing. So, Alma is getting transferred into this new sort of experimental unit in a location whose name I'm going to butcher, so I'm not even going to try to pronounce it.
Because it's just say California. Say the cheap answer.
Oh yeah, I guess they are in California. Uh-huh. Yeah. She gets transferred to a unit in California, made up entirely of women, which is basically a new experimental thing since Zeon doesn't really have any other forces like that. They're derogatorily called the something fairies, the noisy fairies. Because misogyny in the military and all that, but their leader, Killy Galay, is planning on more or less proving that this model can work. And yeah, you're joined by your fellow squadron mates, Mia Brinkman, whose whole thing is she's the smart one who also geeks out over specific types of weapons. There's Helena Hagel, whose whole thing is that she's the cool one. She's the sniper with short hair and a bit of a no thoughts held empty kind of character. And rounding them out, there's Barbara, who is like Killy's second in command and a bit stricter. And Ermella, who handles all the mobile suit repairs, the outfits for the mobile suits and all that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm.
And so I guess we have two reveals over the course of the first five episodes, really. One is that you're fighting against a group that has a Gundam, and if the trailers are if you can divine from the trailers, by the end of this whole thing we'll have multiple Gundams. And their main pilot, Lilith, which is, Lilith like fairy, you see, they're doing a thing. though Lilith is a demon, but, listen. Seemingly traumatized by the war and has a lot of pent-up anger towards Zeon.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, apparently, Alma Sterner is a new type.
Oh, is that what the reveal at the end was about with the...
Yeah, the reveal at the end where they're like, oh, she's from the Flanagan Institute, which is the same institute that produced Chalia Bull and Lala Soon. It's the one-year war Zeon new type institute, basically.
Oh, okay. Yeah. She seemed a lot more normal than those other characters, but maybe that's something that'll happen over time, because, by the end of chapter 5, when she's fighting Lilith, she's very distressed over Lilith's thoughts about how much she wants to destroy Zeon and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Which,
Chalia Bull was a pretty normal dude, and Lala Soon wasn't that abnormal. She was just a woman written by Tomino, which is always a terrible fate.
Yeah. Yeah, this is dealing with the Zeon, an offshoot Zeon force during the one-year war. So this is after the colony drop, and you're basically getting check-ins every now and then. It's like, oh yeah, this is the point where Garma ate it. Or this is where Odessa Day happened, and we lost terribly.
And we're getting there, right? Like, I think by the end of this, I think it's September, they say, of 0079, UC 0079. By New Year's Day, the war is over.
I was assuming that they were just speeding through the one-year war, but, when I think about what has happened between preparing for Odessa Day and actual Odessa Day, 0079, the anime, does spend a lot of time with just people fucking around on the white base and making detours, so This is probably just how time passed for most of the other forces involved in Odessa Day.
And it makes a lot of sense like, if you were making a show that is sort of, like, taking place alongside the timeline of the one-year war, this makes sense. But they're in California. Gundam moves off of the Earth. The Earth is just a one fight. And they're talking about that basically already. That they're like, yeah, we basically lost the war on Earth. Which has numerous ramifications. Like, one is, like, are we gonna go into space, I guess? I guess we're gonna go into space?
Yeah, we still have a third of this game left, so there's...
Two-thirds
of this game left, and if the fighting on Earth is already done, like, I guess they're gonna find a way to go into space, though... Is fighting in space pretty common in Gundam Battle Operations too?
It is. It controls very differently, and I would say noticeably worse. I am not a big fan of the space combat in GBO2. It's also because I'm an old type and I just like the ground. And then also, it feels like the fights become a lot less, like, logically speaking, the fights become a lot less manageable. It's easy for the fights in this game to be these, like, one-off little encounters because there's sort of scattered skirmishing happening all over, you know, the Earth. But once we get into space, the fights are a lot more of a scale and of a, like, dynamism that I feel like is harder to represent in the engine.
Yeah, that plus the fact that the entire hub for the game appears to be within this specific base of operations makes me think that they might find a way to keep it in California.
I mean, honestly, I hope so. I would, you know, and actually... Again, now that I'm thinking about it, like, the units we've seen revealed, like, their trailers showed, like, the White Rider and the Black Rider, which are variants of an existing machine called the Pale Rider, which is a sort of like a Gundam-like. Those are clearly going to be bosses of future volumes, and when we saw them fighting, they were fighting in the deserts on Earth, presumably of California. So I guess we're probably not done yet. Which is reassuring, but also I wonder how they're going to make that work within the plot and the flow of the war, you know?
If I had to guess, I feel like the whole Principality of Zeon or whatever are going to treat this unit as exposable, as disposable. So what I assume might happen is that at some point Zeon's like, okay, we're going to space, except for you, and... They more or less have to struggle with both keeping their existence a secret and, like, doing whatever they can to ride out this war.
That makes sense. I mean, also, like, if they have this dedicated unit that has a Gundam and perhaps soon several Gundams hunting them down, it's going to be hard to find a chance to get off the planet. But mostly what I want to talk about right now, because, you know, the plot is where it is. There hasn't been that much development, is gameplay wise. So first off, I want to hear what you think as a person who hasn't played a ton of GBO2, to whom this engine is relatively new.
It's interesting because, like, my majority of experience with Gundam games is with various versions of Gundam Versus or Maxibuston or things like that. Very arcadey, get in and out, almost like fighting game sort of situation. Mm-hmm. This is like a middle ground between that sort of thing and what I would see from, say, a MechWarrior game or something like that, where all your movement is very purposeful. It takes a long time to reload your weapons. Dealing with situations where if they really start unloading on you, you're pretty fragile. That kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very much a game about the sort of the grunt experience as opposed to being, like, you know, the main character of an anime, I would say. And the main game has a concept of, like, different costs where, like, you know, kind of like, you know, the Versus series, where you have, like, oh, this one's, you know, cost 200 and it's just a regular gym, and this one's cost 700 and it's, you know, the Zeta Gundam or whatever, right?
Yeah, you even unlock missions like that as you progress through the campaign. Like, it has a whole simulation side to it where they're either asking you to complete specific scenarios they've created, or you basically selecting cost and situation like that in order to do a AI skirmish.
Mm-hmm. But, of course, they don't have any of the very high-cost machines in it, at least not so far. So, one of the things that I've found as a GBO2 player is I think largely this game plays pretty well and takes good advantage of the mechanics of GBO2. My problems are mostly with, like, things that I feel like were designed for the multiplayer game that I don't think shine in the single player. And I think the thing I'm going to start off with is sort of the rock, paper, scissors of raid general support.
Yeah, especially since it feels a little bit meaningless when you're going through this campaign because you're only ever playing as a raid type character.
Which is such a strange choice to have raid be the main character. Because general is the thing. Like, here's part of the thing, right? In this game, you have a squad of three. You have one of each, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's not how you play GBO2. You have a squad of, like, five, and three of them are generals, and you have one support and one raid to round them out. Which is part of what makes it so weird, is, like, if a third of your team were raids, you'd be like, what are you clowns doing? And sometimes it does really feel that way, right? Because there are times when, like, I mean, you can't pick, at least in this one, you can't pick your machine. You can pick, like, if you've unlocked a higher level version of your same machine, you can use a higher level version in older missions and stuff. But, like, you are always going to be a raid, at least in Volume 1. You can't choose to be a support or a general. And so, yeah, there are just situations where you're screwed, and there's not much you can do about it. And I don't understand the thinking there.
Yeah, the other thing that kind of confuses me is why the capture point system works. Is included in the single-player campaign, like, and feels very much like a thing where if you were playing it multiplayer, you would have one of your pilots get out of their mobile suit, capture it, and it would be a point capture mode or something like that. But in here, it's like, okay, if you capture one of these points, your characters can... your squad mates can respawn if they happen to lose all their health, or you just dance around it in a little bit and then you start regaining your own health. And it feels very out of place in a game structured like this.
Well, here's the thing is, in GBO2, there is, like, your assumption about the about the way they work in GBO2 makes sense, but it's wrong. They pretty much just work like this in GBO2. The things you can do is you can respawn on one of those points. You can call in a mobile suit if you're on foot and yours gets destroyed, or you can call in an artillery strike. The AoE healing thing that this does is purely an addition for this game, and it's nice. I appreciate it. There is no mode in the game where points matter at all besides giving you a new respawn point, basically.
Huh, okay. That's strange.
And so in that way, I feel like it worked for me because, like, they are, I actually felt they were more important in this game than they are in GBO2, because the healing is really powerful. And, you know, some fights, like ones where you don't have Mia, for instance, who has the healing skill, it's your only way to regenerate health. In GBO2, you can just sort of hop outside and pull out a blowtorch and weld your machine back together, which is silly, but it fucking works. So you can always heal that way in that game. And also, like, in GBO2, it's so easy to get caught outside of your machine, where you're like, I'm going to hop out to capture this point, and then someone rolls up unexpectedly. In this game, they nearly always tell you if there are enemies around or not. you are rarely going to be surprised. I did have one time where I was playing the like the bonus mission as Mia, and I tried to quickly capture the point, and then a raid spawned like a foot away from me and just cut me down, because if you use a beam saber on a human being, they die very fast.
Yeah, the points were also useful during the trick-or-treat tactics mission, just because you're leading various enemy suits down these narrow corridors where it's very easy for them to bunch up and get you if you're not careful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess that's the other problem is I don't... GBO2 for a while has had a meta now that people refer to as the stagger meta because it's based on the stagger mechanic, right? And it makes... perfect sense. You've seen it in action. Basically, it's a overall game strategy of not allowing people to play the game. You hit them with something that makes their mobile suit sort of go through a stagger, like stunned animation, and before they regain control, you hit them with another one, and then another one until they're dead. And I don't love that in that game. I think I think it's not as big of a problem as it is here, where like last night I was like, I'm going to work on the hard mode, right? I'm going to try and make some progress in the hard missions. And I did make progress, but I died quite a few times on the second mission of Act 1 because the last spawn is three Zaku heavy arms who have like these like tank rifles. They're like tank cannons turned into a rifle. And if they hit you, you're staggered. And three of them just stood there staggering me, and I went from full health to dead without ever being able to control my character.
Oof. Yeah, I was mostly playing on normal, and then at some point I switched to easy, and it was mostly a situation of me being able to do that to other enemies, just like getting a 1-2-3 punch situation going with Mia and Helena and just ripping shit. It was great.
And I guess, like, I wish there was they should give you some part or something, because they have the customization from GBO2 where you can modify your suit with parts. They should have an exclusive part that is, like, stagger resistance. That would be really well appreciated. Because the other thing is, the AI, I don't know if the AI got stupider on hard, or if it's just that I noticed it more, but... I might have been able to survive that situation with the three Zaku heavy arms staggering me if I hadn't had a fourth enemy by the name of Helena, who staggered me a lot too with her own shots, and then also just like, she would step in front of me and just juke back and forth in front of my crosshair.
Jeez.
I was just like, motherfucker, get out of the goddamn way!
Oh, that is frustrating. I do remember her saying during one of the missions, hey, get out of my line of sight if you don't want to end up full of holes. But I had no idea that she was also just running in front of your crosshair like that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It was actually really funny because they have dialogue for like when they hit each other, right? And it progresses a little bit as the campaign goes on. It becomes a little bit nicer. When I played Mia's mission, I heard Alma getting hit by Helena and them yelling at each other. I'm not kidding, 12 times in that mission. It was relentless. She just wouldn't let Alma move. Just like, what the fuck are you two doing over there?
That's incredible.
Also, when I was given a general to use, suddenly I was really good at the game. Because I'm a general main, so, you know.
Yep. It was interesting to play those other stories where they don't have any plot associated with them, but it's like a what if you controlled the other one.
Yeah, it's like, oh, here's a little side mission that happened that was of no real importance, where Helena led them into an ambush by accident and they had to fight their way out or whatever, you know?
For the most part, I'm pretty happy with the way that the missions were structured, except I do think it's a bit weird how every single chapter you're sent out on the mission and each one has is basically two missions cut in half. So you get in a situation where you're going out on a mission and you just know something weird is going to happen here, necessitating us to stay here and face a new threat. And it doesn't really ever... It doesn't ever deviate from that structure.
That's fair. I do think it does some good job, a good job of creating tension at certain points, like when you're going after the Hildorfer cannon, the like the mobile tank cannon that Mia wants to mod her mobile suit with. You have, I think it's the second half of that mission. It might only be the first half, but you like, you have to clear out like a hill with a bunch of snipers and stuff, and there's a Jim Stryker there. Which is, you know, like the, with the big, like beam, like double bladed spear thing. And immediately everyone's like, oh fuck, it's that crazy lady again. And it's like, no, actually it's not this time. So I think they do use it at times to fake you out in ways that are fun. But yeah, the fact that it is such a consistent, like mission one, mission two, every act, I agree with you, is a little predictable and kind of makes it lose some of the tension.
Yeah, it's not the end of the world, though, since, like, anything can... There's a number of tricks they can use to necessitate staying there. Like, sometimes one of your comrades goes down for a bit. Other times, okay, this... Oh, what was her name again? Lilith is going to show up and cause some shit, so... Mm-hmm. There's some options there. There's some ways they can shake things up.
And it kind of also feels like it's just one mission, but there's like an intermission in a way, you know? But even so, as you say, it is still just like, well, whatever my objective is right now, something is going to complicate that. So.
Yeah. I feel like if they, one thing that could alleviate these feelings of just presenting two missions back to back would just be like, scoring them like it was one mission, like having something total both halves at the end rather than giving individual ranks for each one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. Though also, I like, a lot of the time I found that if I was having trouble with a mission, I was only having trouble with one of the two. The other one was a pushover, and I wouldn't want to be rated based on performance in one half, you know?
That's fair, yeah.
But, I mean, overall, I think, like, one of the things that I find exciting about this is, like, this is purely 1 year war, as are a lot of side stories, but by this point, GBO2 has machines, like, has been going basically chronologically. Sometimes they go back and add something older, but they sort of been working their way up, and they have machines from Char's counterattack now. So they've really had an array of suits to pull from. That's part of what makes this game possible, is that they're already just like, okay, we'll put in this thing that we already made for the game, right? They can do a ton of that. And I'm excited by the possibility of more, like, I mean, I'm excited for the other two, you know, parts of this game, obviously. But also I'm excited for, you know, like, Gundam Battle Operation presents, you know, this, like, Zeta-era story, presents this, like, 0083 story. There's a whole bunch of stories they can tell with the machines they've already added to the game they're basing this on and all the enhancements they've made to that engine. And I know I would love it just to be a regular thing that's like, oh, here's another episodic little story in this engine.
And I'm sure you appreciate the fact also that they gave you a bunch of really sweet suits you could use in GBO2 as well.
I would love it. I could actually use them and people would stop fucking, like, load into a game. And I'm like, hey, I'd love to try out this new support. Oh, we've already got a support. And I'm like, well, we can do two supports. And then someone does the thing where this happens a lot in higher level ranked, where if your team composition isn't, like, literally ideal, they just won't ready up until you change. So it's like, okay, well, the other person isn't going to fucking change, so I got to play a general again.
Oh, that sounds frustrating.
I should just play. The problem is then you play unranked, and then it's just a fucking crapshoot where, like, I'll have unranked games where I am just, you know, like, it goes both ways, where either I'm just, like, completely shat on, or I am easily the best player on my team, and everyone else is just getting crushed without being able to fight back. It just, you can't win sometimes. You can't win.
Yeah, but does that community still seem like it's pretty healthy since it's been going for a few years now?
I mean, relatively. It's not the biggest online game in the world, but you can usually find matches, and, you know, they're fun.
Yeah. I was kind of surprised by the reaction to this Code Fairy game online. Like, I saw a few tweets from people being very frustrated that they felt like it wasn't getting the proper budget or polish or whatever. Which feels weird because, like, those opening cutscenes seem like they cost regular anime money, and that's not the cheapest thing in the world.
Yeah, I mean, I think that in the gameplay, like, it does, like, the game does feel kind of old, right? And I think there is a part of that that is definitely intentional, right? You are, like, a part of that is them trying to drive home, like, hey, you're in a fucking Zaku, bud. You're not, like, you're not in, you know, the Unicorn Gundam. You're not in this machine that responds like your own body. You are in a clunky robot. But also, I mean, I'm playing this game on the PS5, and it looks fine. It is not a looker. I mean, like, technically speaking, this game is not impressive, you know?
Yeah. Even on the PS4, it isn't the prettiest looking game in the world.
Yeah. So, like, I do sort of understand where they're coming from. I think what people don't seem to get is that Gundam is not yet that big of a deal in America. It's getting there, but it's really not. And a lot of attempts to do, like, big things have, for various reasons, not made it as big as people, as you know, their developers would like. I think there's a lot of incompetence in their management that has led to that. Like, making games and then realizing after you've made them, like, oh, we've made this in a way where we can't bring it out in America because of licensing stuff. It's like, well, you probably should have addressed that while you were making the fucking game, idiot. But if you're making these games just for a Japanese audience, they're going to have to be smaller budget. And when you are taking the chance, they've taken the chance on America in really stupid ways so many times before that they're skittish. It's the, like, I'm trying to think of the good comparison, right? Where, like, they made the Gundam Breaker series, right? They made 1 through 3. One was okay. 2 was pretty good. 3 was a fantastic game. 3 is amazing. And then they decided, okay, we're going to make our US debut and we're going to make new Gundam Breaker. And they just made every possible wrong decision with that game. It's just objectively a trash game. And they're like, see, America doesn't like Gundam. And that's just what they do over and over.
That's kind of what Tecmo Koei did, or Koei Tecmo with Fatal Frame made in Blackwater. Like, all right, it's time to, we're finally free of the Nintendo restriction. We're going to bring Fatal Frame back in a big way. And to do that, we're going to port the Wii U game that everyone hated. Like, we're not going to bring back the 4 games that people liked to varying degrees. Let's just bring back the one that was universally panned.
Mm-hmm. Or, you know, there was the, we had the ahead of scare of that with Super Monkey Ball, where they brought back Banana Blitz for their big comeback. Again, the one that everyone hated. Fortunately, they tried again and put out a game that people seem to like a little better. But I don't know, it's a common mistake. And for it to be happening with Gundam, which is, like, one of the biggest franchises in the world, is very frustrating. But if you're wondering why this isn't, like, a higher budget thing, it's like, honestly, the fact that we're getting it at all is a good sign.
Yeah. I guess we'll see what happens with the series once that live-action movie comes out.
Yeah, I guess we will. I guess we will. Maybe Gundam will die again. Maybe it'll be the third video game crash. On a final note, I guess the one upside of it being a raid focused game is I always was too scared to really play much of raid. Like, I never learned how to do melee and stuff properly, because it's very high investment, right? You really have to commit to play a raid. And I didn't want to do that and then fuck up and ruin things for my friends, right, on my team. Because anyone on my team is my friend, obviously. Regardless of how much abuse they're shedding. No, I'm kidding. You can't. You can only do preset chat messages. but this game has made me much better at raid in a way that I appreciate. So that's nice.
Yeah, it's got me thinking about trying GBO2 again after a pretty bad attempt to get into it like a year or two ago. So,
I mean, it was just that you couldn't find a match, right?
Yeah, it was just I kept searching and kept searching and it just wouldn't put me in anything. And that was frustrating.
I think that was, I remember that was around the time they launched the PS5 version and things were really fucked at first between those two versions. It got a lot better. But, you know. As I say, we'll probably be back for volumes 2 and 3. Any closing thoughts you want to hit here, Jen?
Trying to think of... It's interesting to have a story-based Gundam game focused on Zeons during their most fascist period, I'd say, in the Gundam series so far. Though all that is far away from... Well, it's mostly far away from our group here, except for Killy, who seems to think Garma's pretty cool, but yeah. It's a situation where it's very easy to side with Lilith in terms of like, oh yeah, these people are fuckers, but I initially got weird vibes from it when I saw the poster and it was just like, oh hey, really cute Zeon girl hanging out with other cute Zeon girls, but thankfully it doesn't seem to be that uncomfortable with that stuff.
Yeah, I am unflinchingly in support of Zeon. Not of the Zombies, but I am one of the people who thinks that it's always been a legitimate movement for people's rights that keeps getting co-opted by shitheads. So here's the thing, Jen. They're fighting the Earth Federation, who are also fascists. If they win this, at least they can overthrow the Zombies, and then people will have rights.
Yeah, I guess it's the part where it's still Zombie-controlled Zeon that made me feel weird. But
no, sure, yeah. Sure. But I mean, you know, it's always the thing. You know what the difference is between the Zombie family and the leadership of the Earth Federation? The Federation just don't say that shit on camera. That's the only difference. So, yeah. And the Earth Federation leadership remains the leadership for over 100 years. So, oof. Yeah, they just stay there.
I did think it was really funny seeing that one in the barracks or the dorms or whatever you want to call them. There's a Zeon recruitment poster that just is placed around, and it looks like the most I printed this out in a library for a school project thing. It's like red background, some basic text below that just say something like join Zeon, and then there's a guy doing the Rio de Janeiro Jesus statue pose.
You know who that is, right?
Nope.
That's Zeom Zun Daikun.
Oh, okay.
he's the guy that Zeon's named for. That statue exists.
Oh, it's on site 3.
It's cheesy.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll catch you next time, folks, for some more Code Fairy. And until next time, peace out.
See ya.